The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes. Stomps, stomps, stomps.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I'm Rick Welch, and to my left is Tiziana, Mom So Hard Severse.
What's up?
How you momming so hard?
The baby's going to preschool.
Whoa.
Y'all, can Holy I cannot. My.
Wow.
I'm very excited.
Preschool.
Well, we're shopping. We're shopping for a 2 to 3 day a week. We've got a couple of different places in the running, but Mama's about to have at least 2 days a week with no children.
Oh, what is that all about?
I can't.
Well, I know.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen.
Wait till those emotions come when you drop off.
It's not going to be Tiziana, Mom So Hard Severse. It's going to be Tiziana got her hair done finally, Severse.
Finally.
Tiziana actually got to go to the gym and do a jog today, Severse. That's going to be my
Tiziana
new
Tiziana used the restroom.
Yeah,
without
Tiziana
hearing.
Used the restroom by herself without little fingers under the door, Severse.
Not one to smell your things.
Exactly. Oh, they're... Get as out of my butt is a statement no one ever told you you would say so much as a parent.
But that's what happens.
Yeah.
And then we also got Big Daddy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
And behind the glass, Rocket Man Andy Bishop. I can't believe it.
What's that?
We have a really cool guest here.
Oh, my God.
I've only been talking to him about it for like a year or more.
Yeah.
We got Pastor Michael Miano in the house.
Ooh. Yes.
Welcome
Blessing
back.
To be here. Absolutely. It's great. I'm excited.
So glad you're here, man.
Oh, I'm glad
it's
to be
exciting.
Here.
Yeah. It's like we just had dinner together, and so we've seen each other, but we're trying to act like we just saw each other on a podcast.
Yeah.
So great to see you.
Finally.
finally
saw you.
You
but
here.
We had his wife and his kids here in Giraffe Studio. It's pretty cool.
So we're being fake, Rick.
Yes.
I'm totally faking this.
Yeah. I totally blew at a dinner and said something very uncaring by accident to Miss
really?
Miano. Mrs. Miano, I was like, yeah,
Rick,
don't say those kind of things to people.
You would
Rick.
Foul up and say something wrong.
I did.
You never do that.
It happens all the time. I was, like I say, I was born with a silver foot in my mouth.
Better than one up your butt.
Yeah.
That's a different
true.
Crowd.
Yeah, that's true. Well, so the last time I saw you, Mike, I was at your conference up in Long Island. And Advancing the Faith was the theme of that conference. And I always love going up to your church, Blue Point. That's such a, have you seen pictures of the church?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? It's just a beautiful, quaint little church. And it's right there, you know, on the edge of Long Island. And what is Blue Point is the name of the town, right?
Yeah, we're nestled in between the two bigger towns in our area would be Patchogue and Sayville. So if people are from Long Island, believe it or not, most Long Islanders don't even know Blue Point is a town.
Oh, really?
In Long Island.
Wow.
So I grew up there and didn't know that Blue Point was a town in Long Island. So,
oh, really?
Or on Long Island, depending who you talk to.
Yeah.
Some folks are listening to saying he's not from Long Island. He said in Long Island. but again, Blue Point is the name of the town. Very small town. You're in and out within 3 minutes. Nice. You said it well. Quaint.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of, you know, the movie Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it's a little Connecticut town that's right on the.
I've never seen Hocus Pocus.
Oh my gosh.
I know the movie.
Are you kidding me?
The movie, but I've never seen it. You guys do not understand
the level
of control that was exerted over my childhood by my fundamentalist parents.
Yeah.
Like, I have not seen Hocus Pocus. I'd never seen Practical Magic till I was like fully grown. I don't think I've seen Matilda. Like, these are all like very
Witches
scary.
Witches of Eastwick?
Yeah. Oh, now I saw that as an adult. That's a great movie. But you know, I've never seen Hocus Pocus.
Okay, so you should watch it. It's very fun. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. And it's real. Every bit of it's true. I'm just kidding. None of it's real. But it's that quaint little Connecticut town that's like right on the ocean. It's just beautiful. And that's the way Blue Point looks.
I was expressly thinking as he was describing it that it sounded like someplace they would film a Hallmark movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Precisely.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
The city guy comes out to Long Island and meets a girl that loves Christmas, but he hates it.
Yeah.
She's got to turn them around on Christmas.
But it's always a happy ending.
Yeah but absolutely. The surprise is
well,
that...
Well, snow falls on Christmas Eve, and that's what changes
his mind. Yeah. Yes.
And then, of course, you have those little, like, chimes that play, and then they kiss. Yeah. It's always that's how it works.
It's magical.
They're walking through an apple orchard covered in snow, and there just happens to be a mistletoe hanging. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can hear it. I can see it.
This apple's growing mistletoe. This is amazing.
Whatever. Someone hung it there for a thing. Yeah.
For the Christmas miracle.
So needless to say, Blue Point is a Hallmark town.
Hey, go visit us. It's magical.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah. It is a beautiful little town. I really enjoy it.
My snow scene is Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Between the woman and the man.
Was that where he licked a pole or something? Didn't he do something strange in it? Yes.
But, well,
that was also a Christmas story.
Oh, that was. You're right. I forget what they did in Dumb and Dumber. They did a lot of dumb things.
Yes.
Well, they froze to each other on the minibike.
They froze to the minibike. But when the woman, Samsonite.
Yes. Miss Samsonite.
Miss Samsonite. And the not Jim Carrey.
Lloyd.
Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, Lloyd.
They're playing in the snow, and he literally takes a snowball, and he's standing from me to you, and he hits her in the head with it.
Like wide open.
Hard as
wide open.
Like a baseball pitcher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little girl like me fell in love with a little boy like you, remember that part? That was my favorite part of the movie.
So there's a chance.
So you're telling me there's a chance. And then he walks out of the place, and he's like, so we went to the moon. Oh, my gosh. He saw the newspaper article on the wall.
Well, anyway, so Mike and I have been sort of talking over the past year about him coming down and just making it happen. He was able to bring his family down here in the mountains and just chill out, which is nice. A year after our terrible events, so it doesn't look as bad as it did a year ago. Things are kind of picking up and looking a little bit better. I can tell you where to go if you want to see how terrible it was. There's a lot of places still in Swanano and Black Mountain that are really bad. And then, of course, Lake Lure and Chimney Rock. They're coming back. They're doing a lot of work down there. But did you guys hear that is it the Kissing Bridge or the Rainbow Bridge?
Oh, the one in Lake Lure, the Rainbow Bridge.
They got to tear it down. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a really well-known bridge in that area. It's sad. But anyway, so what we decided to do is, Mike, we're going to let you lead this. Like, I want you to, you've got the topic, and you're going to open it up to us here, and we're just going to chat. And this is, I'm very excited about this conversation, because I think we're going to go kind of all over the place, which is good.
That's not at all on brand for us.
Not on brand.
Not at all. We don't totally stretch it.
We're going to meander? What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those who wander are not always lost.
That's
right?
True.
Hey.
So I appreciate the time. And, you know, talking obviously about Helene and the storm, I think that leans in on our conversation, because what I'm hoping we might talk about is the importance of community. And you think about with Helene, if there was not a community around to help restore, even right now, I imagine you would say that it would have been impossible.
Yeah.
And I think that helps us lean in on a topic of how important is community and what is community?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really been my mind and heart. So you want me to jump right in?
Jump right in. Hammer down.
It's funny. I say that a lot at church. I say jump right in, or we'll be praying and somebody will say, can I offer a prayer? I'm like, jump right in. I can tell they look at me like, what? Now, what does that even mean?
Out of curiosity, in Long Island, do they say jump right on?
I don't think they might. They might. I'm off on my
really
Long Island lingo.
That is called
a
callback.
That's right. That's right.
You're wondering, it's a callback. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm always saying things a different way. Sheesh. Pray for me. Jumping right in, I guess the thing I would say would be, I do want to talk to us about, and when I talk about community, I'm thinking about it more along the lines of a system, right? So or a system or a discipline. I think being a part of community is a discipline that we need to entertain in our lives. What would be the other word? Or a boundary, right? Mm-hmm. And a boundary, because I think we live in a society, or I know we do, we live in a society that really wants to push us into, you know, self, right? Mm-hmm. And if not, we don't need a society to help us, unfortunately. At least I'll speak for myself. I don't need a society to make me selfish, or the norms of society to teach me to be selfish.
But
I'm selfish.
That is true. But you need a society that is built in a way that allows you to exist individually. Right?
Absolutely.
That you couldn't if you, the way towns and stuff have been organized for human history. Literally, like, if you weren't that weirdo that lived alone in the woods and, like, hunted and just traded a little bit, that was rare. That's, like, a legendary weirdo. everybody else was forced to be together, whether they liked it or not, because it was the only way to stay alive. You were always in groups. Like this thing we think of, literally not an option for
the Industrial Revolution
history.
Has created a whole different world in terms of the ways that human beings are able to function and survive, like Andy's saying, without one another. You know, you can go buy shoes at the store. You don't have to know the cobbler in your village.
It's also one step greater at this point. You don't have to leave even to buy things anymore. That was true for most of our lives. And now, you know, part of the problem over here, everything got off of Amazon. And there's no, like, encouraged common space. There still is in some modern urban areas. There are, like, much more common spaces where people accidentally end up. I mean, just think about, like, Central Park. But that's not even, like, a great example. It's a good example, but it's not a great one. There are other societies where...
Would a roundabout consider commonplace? I've been building a lot
Your
of those.
Bedroom would be considered a commonplace.
All right. I was getting ready to say your mom, but no.
No!
That's your mom's house?
That's some serious shade.
Here we go.
Yeah.
All right, backing down, backing down. We got a pastor in the room. Calm down.
My mom.
Mike's trying to talk about some powerful and real and like our need for
Welcome
when we're over
burrows.
Here making fart jokes. Like,
you know, I think we're saying some of the important stuff because society has really changed. And you know, it's changed in the sense that we see people calling for those type of community things that we were just speaking about. For example, right here in town, the Biltmore Park Square.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The way that they're building that, I was reading about it online. Obviously, we're here in town wanting to take mm-hmm. the family out. And as we were reading about it, that's one of the pitches is that it's a community-based, it's something new. And me and Rashonda, my wife, started talking a little bit about mm-hmm. what that looks like in our area, where there are people that are creating these type of environments where you're going to bump in. Now that your apartment is in the middle of the shopping complex,
right.
You're going to bump into people.
Yeah,
now.
You're living above the street, and anything you want are most of the basic essentials, which isn't exactly true of the businesses that are in Biltmore Park. But the ideal is that the things that you need for daily life are literally
within
things you will
distance.
Walk to.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea. I love that. If you've ever lived in a city, it is just, you move more, you meet more people in a true urban area. You just do. You're statistically, you weigh less if you're in an urban area.
Mm-hmm.
And you know more people and you bump into more people because you have no choice. First, the primary thing there is a lack of car travel.
Yeah.
So it's not the only thing, but it's huge.
So are you saying that I live in a rural area? Is that what you're trying to say here, Andy?
Could you?
Your bedroom right. is a rural area.
Your mom's a rural area.
I already forgot the pastor's in the room. It didn't take long. I told you. All right. Sorry, Mike.
Well, the thing that's wonderful about, I think, being when you are part of like the kingdom of God is that you run into people like you're sitting here talking about this thing. And you're talking about that's the exact conversation that my husband and I were having yesterday, not even about before I even got the text about what our topic was going to be. And that's exactly what Dylan and I have been talking about is what is community? How do you create it? And the reason why it can be so difficult to create and craft community is because you have to be willing to have hard conversations about what are your boundaries, what are your expectations, and how do we do this together? And so many people are so averse to conflict and confrontation because they don't have the skills anymore to get through it that we just would rather isolate until something happens like Helene and we all have to come out of our houses and have conversation.
Which was great.
It was an
amazing time.
For a lot of people.
Great.
Yeah, like my husband, almost grieves.
If you weren't, okay, 1,000, like back up 1,000 steps.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're with you.
It was not.
Yeah, if you weren't swept away in your home and died.
We were talking about the after effects and the community come together, not the terrible parts of this.
It's right. called post-traumatic growth.
It's
a psychological phenomenon where when there's a traumatic experience, there is this opportunity for some growth and that this concept of community. But here we are a year later and are we still doing it?
Well, yeah, you know what? It fades quick.
It does because, fade.
You know, you get back to the, you go back to baseline.
Everybody's in a rush to get things back to the way that they were. Yeah. But anyway. All right, Mike, sorry, we keep taking you off
track. No, you're right on track, actually. So speaking to your point about the community, right, and defining community and what it looks like to build community, I think that is the trickiest. I know that is the trickiest part, right? And one thing I wanted to mention that I was thinking about today, I was in a course where we were talking about the different ways each of us deal with anger. And you might call it anger management. Mm-hmm. And what we were talking about was the different ways each of us have experienced anger, right, in our lives, in our families. And what I realized as I listened to different people share and then think about what I would share is I realized I have an interesting benefit from not having any foundations in my life. Hmm. And what that is that it led me on a course where I had to search myself. I had to find the things that work. Like, I don't have a person or my family that I could say, this is the person I learned how to deal with anger from. Instead, mm-hmm. I have this person, a bunch of different people, some organizations, some things some people told me along the way. Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, that relates to my understanding of community. I've kind of learned how to piece together my definition. I don't have a one size fits all definition or, you know, a way that community should look. And I thought about that and I said, that's interesting because in one part of my life, I would have told you that not having a way to go back to the anger point, but again, it leans in on community. I would have said that was a bad thing, that I didn't have somebody define for me what it looks like to control my anger or handle my anger or deal with anger, just like I don't have somebody to point to tell you how they taught me about community or who they taught me until I began to look for myself. And obviously, on my last podcast, I shared a bit of my testimony where I joined a gang. And the mm-hmm. gang, you know, by and large, my family members, the gang and different influences in my life have taught me how to deal with anger and have taught me how to deal with community. Mm-hmm. And then as I was in this course recently, I realized I've been saying that was a bad thing, but now I've realized, and we talked a little bit at dinner about Romans 12:1-2, where it talks about, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Mm-hmm. And it even further says that this is the way that we prove what the will of God is, the acceptable, true, and I forget what adjective I want to add there, but either way, the true, lovable, graceful, you know, will of God. This is how we do it, by the renewing of our minds. In other words, constantly rethinking, constantly reevaluating, finding out what's healthy. Or dare I add 1 Thessalonians 5:20-21, right? Where prove all things, hold fast to that which is good, let mm-hmm. go of that which is bad. So how many times, thinking now, flipping back to community, mm-hmm. how many times have we come up with definitions of community where it may have been helpful for a time? And then it was like, well, now that we have moved into that time, now community can change mm-hmm. and now we should grow. And maybe we need to look at the things that we thought were good before. We need to say, now that we've grown, they're not so good, or vice versa.
Yeah. I'm just like sitting here putting everything you're saying together in my mind. And I'm watching like a time lapse of our family's experience since Helene, because we got all super wrapped up in each other. And I ended up taking on a bunch of neighborhood roles that after things sort of leveled out and things started back to normal became overwhelming to me. And I had to figure out how to like renegotiate. How am I going to fulfill these roles in the community? Like, for example, because the woman across the street from me, her mother has dementia and is immobile. So she needs help getting her mother up out of bed every day and onto the toilet and then onto the couch and then back in reverse in the evening. During Helene, I was like, hey, I'm right here. I'll do it.
Right.
Every single day. Rain or shine.
Times will change. That's
right. Right. And at the time, it was like this. We were all doing stuff. We were all working together. We were all hanging out. But after a time, I was like, this is too much. I can't even go on vacation.
Certain things were closed. Yeah. Certain things weren't happening at that time that you were
right.
able.
Right. And then now, my kid now had to go, my preschool's opened back up. So now I've got to take my kid to school every day. But what was interesting, so like you have this community and these patterns and these ways of interacting with one another that are the way we've been doing things. But something else starts to shift and move as life does, as humans do, as people do, as jobs do, as weather does. And I had to renegotiate this agreement that I had made. And it's easy to want to say, like, use anger or whatever. Like, this is just, I don't want to do this anymore. This sucks. Instead of going, how can I continue to fulfill this role in a way that's not going to be quite so taxing? and ended up like talking with this woman about it. And we ended up getting another individual in the community that also wanted to, you know what I mean? And so what ended up happening is the community actually grew even larger. The amount of people that were supporting this individual became even bigger.
Yeah, it became truly communal because two people is not.
Right.
That's not exactly. That's not truly communal. Exactly. That's great. It's great.
But that's it. You got to like, but you know, I love that first, to be transformed by the doing of your mind. They won't be able to test what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. There is a neurological concept about our brains and how they work. When your neurons have developed, made a connection, neural connection. If I do this, then this happens. It starts to form like a track and your brain starts to like, those grooves start to deepen over time, neural pathways. But when you learn a new thing, like how to drive a stick shift, instead of you've been driving automatic all this time, that's a neural pathway. This is how you drive a car. Your brain has to actually cut a new pathway. This is how I drive a car, but it's different now. Because I have to do these extra things. And your brain has to almost has to relearn and cut new neural pathways to learn new skills. And so when you're constantly being aware of and willing to renew your mind and let certain skill sets or certain habits be transformed and renewed, it's actually has like a physical aspect to it, changing your mind. And so now, you know, being willing to confront this thing, being willing to sit with a difficult conversation, being willing to reach out to other people in the community, you know, now everybody's got a new clockwork that we're working in and around, but it can be difficult to do when it requires having conversation. I mean, how do you look at somebody and go, you know what? I realize that if I don't help you do this, your mom's probably going to die, but I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. But when you things know, get that back- sucks for you, right?
Like, yeah, I know it's tough.
And so you have to be willing to sit there and figure out how to have really tough conversations with these people that you're living in close proximity with.
Yeah.
And that's growth, because if we don't have those conversations, we don't grow in those ways. So you see where I think we highlighted an interesting point that a lot of times what seems like we'll do community and then there's things that maybe pop up that have to change, or things that are bad that need to be changed, or things that are good that we want to hold on to. And I think that's so important about community, is to kind of put it in the air. That's why I think of Romans 12 with the idea that it's just about renewing our minds, that we don't have, there's not a one size fits all way of doing community. Mm-hmm. And obviously the reason I want to bring this up, let's, you know, I'm a pastor of a church, I'm involved in the preterist community, and I say that loosely. That's a bit of my heart. Maybe we'll get into it. Maybe we won't. But community is important, and it seems like we agree around the room that community is important. And of course, Rick, I mentioned to you the quote from Margaret Mead. I love that quote. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, it rings true in every facet of, you know, the world, not just the church and Christianity, but never doubt that a group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. And I know there's a couple different versions, you know, citizens of the world, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So pardon the paraphrase. However, that quote rings so true, that that is the only thing that ever has. And as I look out at the church, those that follow after Jesus Christ, those who call themselves Christians, say, are we listening? Are we paying attention to the need for community? Are we looking at the examples of what happened here in North Carolina and how a community came together? Again, and that's just one example. There's so many examples of how community, and I imagine we probably have these examples in our own lives individually. You know, you're sharing, you know, that's the point. We have these examples of where we've seen community work, where we've seen frustrations with it, where we've dealt with it. And I think it's time for the church to wake up, the Christian community to wake up, those that follow after Jesus to wake up and say, community is important. And in the Christian world, the church world, we know there's a lot of people that don't go to church anymore, don't engage the church, don't know what the church is, don't want to be a part of that social club called church, if you will, which I can understand in many respects. You know, across the board, I feel like we've just lost the idea and the value of community.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, that's where for me, like, I like the word myopic. That's the word that Andy uses a lot because he's in this, you know, studio most of the time. But I have a myopic view of the church, because where most of my church experiences are right here within about a 5 to 10 mile radius of where I grew up. This is where I grew up. This is what I know. And so I have a very myopic view of it. And during Helene, I got a really again, from my myopic view, but it was being broadened because I personally was trying to stretch outside of my comfortable place. I know Tiziana and I worked together on mm-hmm. some things. Rick and I worked together mm-hmm. and he helped us, and we were able to like help in really cool, unique ways. But the other side of it is I also got to see, and this is where the church was working together, but it didn't, there was a lot of people that weren't even involved in the church that were doing a lot in our community. It was really a beautiful thing to see all these people working. But then I saw this one particular church that literally did nothing. And it was palpable for me. Like when I got to observe them not doing something because they believed that God was so sovereign that he was going to take care of it. He brought the storm and he's going to take care of the storm to where there was no effort on the part of his body, that I felt it. Like it really bothered me tremendously. And
yeah, that's a dangerous kind of
theology.
That's
James. Faith yeah. without works is dead.
Right. I mean, look, you get together in some of these reform circles, and to me, it gets incredibly fatalistic. It just does. And not, I'm not trying to poo-poo on reform theology either, but there's a lot of it that's beautiful to me.
Please don't. But
I won't, because I know that you are, right?
Yes.
Exactly. And so I come from that as well. And so, but when I saw it not, let me say this, you're in reform theology, but I look on your page and you're always at work. Okay. So that's your reform theology has got you out there working. That's great. There are some people that take it and they become so insular, they do nothing. And I was around that crowd, and it was really bothering me because they kept saying, no, we're good. We're all good. And I was like, well, it's not about you. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. It's about your community, and you can be a hub. You can help. And you don't even know because you're not getting out there and asking. You're not looking. This church up where I'm at, they were going out through the community because we didn't have any phones. We didn't have any power. Like there was no way. They were going to find the needs. Mm-hmm. They were looking for the needs. They weren't saying we're good. They were saying our community's
who
not.
Isn't?
We've got to find out who isn't.
They're making the mistake of thinking, I don't know how to say it, so I'll use an example. If this neighborhood was perfect and everything around it was decimated, that does not make me okay.
Right.
Right? They're making this like hypercritical mistake of misunderstanding the importance of the world outside of their immediate people.
Yes.
It's like you can't just be like, well, the entire town is under a shovel, but we're fine. No, you're screwed. If the town is screwed, you're screwed too.
But the larger point that I want to make, the reason I'm even bringing this up, the larger point to this is that as an individual, I learned that I did not want to be a part of that community.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
But I also realized that by doing so, that where my heart was at, that I was taking, I don't mean like I'm the only one that cared. That's not what I mean. Just hear me out. Within this little community, in this group, if I took myself out of the picture, then I was the one person leaving that actually had a heart for that community. Do you get what I mean? Now, there's plenty of other people that weren't involved in that church that loves this community, and they did a good job. They did. But I was affected because in the community that I was in, it was a massive letdown. So therefore, I took myself out of that community because that is not my way of thinking.
Yeah.
That was tough. Now, I get into other groups that I don't necessarily agree with on everything, but what they're doing in the community to me is a beautiful thing. I don't know how to handle that. I'm renewing my mind with that idea.
Well, and I think that goes back to like this, you know, Mike, you said earlier that you know, people aren't involved in the church. Like the numbers are down. And the next question is, well, which church? I wish that there was a body of Christ that was inviting and open and welcome and made sense to everyone. But the body is so divided on lines of eschatology, on lines of theology, on like, you know, I mean, Paul says it himself. Some say I follow Paul and some say I follow Peter. We can't even seem to come to an agreement about which Jesus we're following and what we should be doing. And if you are not, if you don't already have a relationship with Jesus, and if you're not deeply involved in figuring that out, like everyone in this room is, it looks confusing and weird and ugly and something that you don't want to be a part of because it's gotten so, the infighting has gotten so visible and
visceral.
And visceral that it's not an inviting place.
Yeah.
You know, the church, quote unquote, I don't think exists anymore. You have a church here and there.
And anytime you bring up, like, this topic, you know it's going to go there. That's exactly where this topic goes.
Yeah.
It does.
Goes to where? And that doesn't mean you can't.
It goes to where?
It goes to this immediately where you're like, but the church is so divided, so how? And I think this is what the conversation needs to be about. How?
Mike, can I ask you, as I'm sitting here listening to all this, can I ask you a tough question? On the standpoint of it being a pastor and you're talking about community, what if building the community you wanted meant you had to walk away from the structure of what you call the church? If you could have the community that you want and you desire, what if the structure of the church is something you had to walk away from?
Well, I think that's something we need to be willing to do. I think that's a good question to ask, because as we're talking about the division in the church, I think we have to realize that community is not something, an idealized community, the idea of community is not community. Right. Everybody agreeing with me in a building and we all worship the same, we all raise our hands exactly the same height. That's not a community.
Right.
And that, meanwhile, that church, that location, those people in that place will say this is a community, but it's not.
No.
It's everybody. The church actually in the Bible is called one new man. So that would mean that the bunch of people that agree in this one location in Corinth, for example, or in Ephesus, that's just one man. You're a bunch of people coming together. The only way that becomes a community is by interacting with other people that don't view things exactly the same way as you. So to your point, I agree that I think the healthiest place to be with community is kind of where I'm trying to set the tone, is allowing for us to be upset with what it looks like and saying, go ahead, please.
No, I don't mean to cut you off, but in getting to the point, if I can do this right, getting to the point of where even Christ himself did not introduce himself as, hey, I'm Jesus Christ of the Church of Latter-day Saints. He didn't introduce himself as though he has a sponsorship.
I would have went with superstar.
That's a good one. They didn't bring.
I was going to say good because he'd have been wrong. That was terrible. Sorry.
When you introduce yourself, and it's the structure of how we've done it, and I'm not saying you're wrong because I've done it myself when I introduce myself in a certain situation. I will say that I'm from somewhere. I'm a representative of, you know, say you would go in and then I'm Michael Miano from Blue Point Bible Church. And the church structure is almost like your sponsorship. So it comes with a structure mindset. So when you introduce yourself to a person, to be honest, they could, in my opinion, they could care less about the structure. They just need a need met. Other than you saying, hey, this, my name is Michael and I want to help a need. I'm here to help and communicate and be a community with you and help you in a need, that who cares about the other stuff? That's what I'm saying. You're walking away from this mental construct or this construct that we've developed that maybe Christ never wanted us to have and never wanted us to build upon, to what we've created, to where now it's like you said, which church takes over? If the church is going to take over the world, which church do you want to have to take over? Which one do you want to rule it and reign over the world? We're so divided and torn apart. I don't want, right now, I don't want any church to run nothing, to stay away from it all. The community that Rick dealt with and the people up here in this area, it wasn't church that ran it, it was the people that ran it. Now, they ran it out of a church building, but they ran it as a group of people that were multifaceted group of people, very diverse, helping people's needs on a constant basis, going to their house and saying, hey, do you need something? Versus a group that wanted to be a church, didn't help anybody.
The motive, here's the interesting part. The motive behind it was they wanted to help their neighbor.
Right.
It didn't matter what the foundational principle of that was. The fact is, it was the outworking of what it was. They wanted to help their neighbor.
Right.
So you could have an atheist that would come in and cut down a tree, or you could have a believer that would come in and cut down a tree. They wanted to help their neighbor. In their heart, they had a reason for doing what they did, and that was good enough for themselves, whatever it may be.
Right.
Some people just wanted to help. Some people thought,
perfect,
this is my way of showing an example of what Jesus would do. Regardless of what the foundational principle was, the outer working was all the same. It felt the same. I see wheels turning over there, Andy. What you thinking?
Last time I cut a tree down in somebody's yard, they told me to get out of their yard.
So I know that's tough question, but it's walking away from something you cherish so much in a community that you have developed and grown with a group of people. And the only question I ask is, have we created something that's we think is awesome, but it's at the root of what is stopping us from doing anything.
You ever made something so good people just stop mid-bite and stare at you? Well, that happened to me last week. I grilled up some steaks, didn't do anything fancy, just used this new seasoning blend called My Secret Ingredient Steakhouse Seasoning. They asked, what do you use? And I said, it's a secret, because it literally is. My Secret Ingredient has two blends. Everything, which goes on, well, everything. Eggs, roasted veggies, popcorn, even pizza crust. And then there's Steakhouse, a smoky, savory, grillmaster level rub that makes you feel like you've got a culinary degree. I don't know what they put in it. I don't ask. I just shake, cook, and bask in the compliments. If you're ready to level up your flavor game and keep a little mystery in the kitchen, go to mysecretblends.com. That's mysecretblends.com. But shh, you didn't hear it from me.
I think I hear your question, and I think that's a great question to ask. And yes, I think in many regards, what we call church, and many people call church, because let's face it, where I'm from, if you ask five people in my neighborhood what church is that go to church, we all have different ideas in our mind of what that means. When I speak of the church, I'll say this, I think I'm speaking biblically in that in Ephesians, it says that the church has been given to make known the manifold wisdom of God.
Right.
So when I'm speaking of church, I'm not necessarily speaking about the Blue Point Bible Church. I believe we are a local outpost of what God is doing through His church. And I, two things I want to just say in the midst of that is I think the healthiest place to be is disenfranchised with your local community.
Oh, no.
Because then you'll work toward change. You'll be willing to accept change. You know, it's said that too many people have been made too comfortable, or they're building up their idealized, you know, perspective of what a community is. And meanwhile, that's great to you, but horrible to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, or that's, you know, helping you, but not helping me, or leading you to healthy things. Leading me, again, in church structure, there's some people, I suppose, in that church you mentioned, Rick, that probably are having some healthy experiences. Maybe they're growing in their knowledge of God.
Sure.
They're growing in grace. However, we obviously see that there's people there that are developing unhealthy mm-hmm. attitudes. And I think that's the reality of any community, right? In the New Testament, for example, the churches I read about, they're churches where people don't agree with each other. There are churches where Paul has to write a letter to tell them, folks, some among you believe this, some among you believe this. This is what we're doing. This right. is the main thing. And, you know, obviously that becomes a big part of the conversation. I think by and large, the American church has lost the main thing. I don't even know if most folks know what the main thing is anymore. Some people will say it's Jesus. But then you listen a little bit about Jesus and you're like, oof, I hope not. I hope that's not the main thing.
Is it Jim Jones' Jesus or John Calvin's Jesus?
Yeah, totally.
How about Martin Luther's Jesus? What about?
Is it the one who hates immigrants and can't wait to deport them, or the one who said to welcome the stranger into your land? Which Jesus?
Yeah.
Although I'm making a joke, because the first one, Jesus was not like that at all. Jesus said that.
Yeah. Undocumented.
Yeah, undocumented.
That's
is the
word I've been using.
Way
it. I've been
to
using
refer
it
to individuals.
It's working pretty well.
Yeah.
Saying undocumented.
Yeah, yeah.
Running around calling people illegal is like me going up to somebody and saying, "Hello, felon."
Like I said,
like, you just don't do that.
If you're not going to say "felon," Donald Trump, then don't call an undocumented person illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it, then do it.
Yeah.
Walk up to your principal at high school and say, "Hey there, traffic law violator." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if that's how we're going to behave, then let's go ahead and let's just do it.
But I mean, to your point, Mike, earlier what you were saying was, you know, that in that church, I'm sure there are people that are growing in grace and, you know, learning and healthy. Yes. The trouble is the leadership and how it's being promoted, how this to where it's like, I hate to say it, but it's like poison to the mind. It really is. It is something that is consistently just given. I was as reformed as you get. I was. I mean, I to an extent. I'm not as much as I was, but it doesn't matter. That's not my point. My point is that when it starts at the top in this particular area and it sort of trickles down into the smaller groups, there are a lot of people that are not able to overcome on their own. The renewing of their mind is renewing with poison. They're renewing it with stuff that's not good, right? So for me, like, that's been one of the biggest challenges in the boroughs of Berea is, for me, was I was an insular, isolated person with a myopic view who decided to challenge myself and to listen. And that was one of the hardest things I ever did. was to listen to other people's experiences and then validate them because they were their experiences. And I refused to say your experience isn't good or wrong. I just decided, no, I'm not going to do that. I can't because I didn't live their life. But I hear people tell these stories, and some of them, what in my heart, I feel like they ended well, you know, and some of them I felt like, oh, this is terrible. I hate that the way that they ended. But I decided to listen. That's one of the things you'll learn in an anger management class. It's one of the hardest things to do is to sit in it and to listen and to let it come in and then actually deal with the real information. That's hard to do. And that's what you need to do in community. You have to hear the hard things. You have to listen and you have to be willing to sit in it.
Well, if I know it all, I don't need to listen to you. You see that? And if you remember my last time with you.
Did you hear
here,
what I just said? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, what?
Yeah, you beat me there.
To your point, last time I was here, I said that I was a know-it-all in recovery, yes. Right? And the point being, the only way that we can actually be healthy with each other and want to listen to each other and desire to listen is to admit we don't know it all. And if I know it all, I don't need to hear what you're going to say because I already know what you're going to say. But if I admit I don't know it all, I'm probably wrong about some things, I might have it right about some things, I can sit in community and grow and allow that time to change me, hopefully change you. And I think that's the biggest thing missing is a willingness to grow together, not be the, you know, you think about the leadership in some of these churches. That's the problem, is that the leadership has nothing to learn from the other people, no stories to listen to. And then we can't foster community if we don't find the need to listen to each other.
You know, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in all these years in this podcast, you know what I learned the most? To stop making people conform to the image that I think that God is. Mm-hmm. It is a huge lesson. I have this in my mind.
On my forehead. That was a good.
That's one of the biggest things that I figured out. Was that in my mind, in all of our minds, we have this idea of what we think God is. And then we need everyone else to conform to it, or they're not, it's not towing the line. We can even remain graceful towards somebody, but inside, we're still wanting them to change. We still want them to conform. But unfortunately, none of us really know. All we have is what either what we've read and interpreted in the scripture or what we've experienced in our heart through the Spirit of God. That's it. That's what you got. So you can wrongly interpret the Bible, and you can also wrongly interpret what's going on in your heart. People do it all the time, right? Whenever you look at somebody, if the first thing that you want to do is have them change to fit the image that you have for them, you're already wrong. You've already missed the boat. You have to sit in it. You have to let them be who they are, and you have to learn who to love who they are. You've got to learn how to love them. If he tells you to love people, I don't know any love greater than the love that is described as Jesus's love. I don't know a love better than that. I just don't. Based on its description, what he did for an ungodly person, what he did for somebody that who had no reason to be even in his presence, and yet he went across a lake to get to him. You see what I mean? He's the one that's outcast. He's the one that's scraping his arms and going. That man was in hell. And Jesus went and got him.
He walked across the water to get him.
Yes, he did. In
the storm.
You're talking
about the man in the tombs.
Yeah, the maniac of Gadara. I mean, that, if you want to look at somebody with an image, the whole community, the Bible tells you what the community thought of him.
Yeah.
We've put him in fetters. He can't, you know, we've chained him up. We've got him put away. But Jesus said before, if you listen, he says, I must go to the other side. And we know that the other side was him. So the Spirit of God was leading him to him. And when he got there and you looked at him directly, see, for us, we think, well, we can't cast out demons like he did. Wrong. Wrong. I'm not even talking about demonic. I'm talking about looking at somebody and where they are and sitting with them and being loving and not asking them to conform to my image, but loving them where they are always. And don't stop. Don't quit. And by the way, the minute you think, well, once they get cleaned up, then I'm going to feel better, you've missed the boat. You've already missed it because it is a selfishness that you have.
That's right. In that story, does it end with he came of his right mind? I might be missing that. Okay, so he came of his right mind.
Yeah, he sat in his chains and could have broke them at any time and didn't break them until Christ showed up.
But what did he want? What was the thing, the one thing that the man asked for at the end? Remember? He said, I want to go with you. And what did Jesus say? No. go into your Decapolis, into the 10 cities, and tell them what I've done for you. Why? Why would he do that? Why would he say that?
Jesus, were you going to answer, or that was that rhetorical?
No, I want you to answer it. It's rhetorical.
Jesus's mission was the lost sheep. Jesus's mission was the outcast. Jesus's mission was collecting his people from the outskirts and drawing them in. And if you think about every single time Jesus worked a miracle, every single time Jesus healed a leper, every time Jesus healed a person with demons, every time Jesus made somebody who was blind not blind, he wasn't just healing an individual, he was creating an advocate.
Yeah.
Because you think that person was going to go back to community and have a different thought about a similar person, a similar situation? Mm-hmm. If you had been healed from blindness, you are now a deep advocate for the blind. If you have been healed from a mental illness, you are now a fierce advocate for others who have mental illness. Mm-hmm. Jesus wasn't just healing people for the and giggles of it.
Right.
Jesus was creating teammates and advocates that understood from a personal experience what it felt like to be on the outside, and then sending them back in to say, now go find more.
Yeah. I mean,
now in most cases, he told them, don't tell anybody.
Right. But he didn't say, now leave your communities and come with me. Stay where you are. Be this new, renewed thing in your community. Spread the compassion and the kindness and the love and the healing that you've experienced now. You know?
Well, yeah. Think about the woman at the well.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it. Just think about it. She's a Samaritan. She's at Jacob's well. He tells his disciples that I've got to go through Samaria. He's going through Samaria to this particular place for this one woman.
It's almost the same. It's a recapitulation of what we just talked about. Her life was in the same shambles.
Yes, it's just a different view.
Yes.
In the community, she's the outcast. Yes. That's why she's there. She's had many husbands. She's there alone at this particular time.
She's walking when the other women ain't there.
To the people that everybody doesn't want to have because they don't line up with the rest of the community.
So what would the church look like today if that's what they were doing? So what would the church look like now if we were continuing to go find the people on the outside of society and
the marginalized? Once these people came into the community, they didn't look like what they used to. That's fair. There's nothing wrong with that. The woman said, come and see the man that told me everything that I'd ever done. And he did tell her, go, right? You're not with your husband. Yes, you are wrong. But I came to you. Like, I came to you, okay? So I'm here for you. And then she goes and tells everybody, come and see. Now, she is going to change, and that's okay. But she most likely would find another outcast like her and bring her to him. Do you know what I mean?
It worked from the ground up.
Yeah, and the thing is, yes, you will change within that community. Just don't get complacent in that community. Don't forget who you were.
It's like laziness creeps in.
Right. Or self-righteousness creeps in.
I have done it over and over. You want to talk about recapitulation?
Yeah.
My self-righteousness is ridiculous. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I can get into a church for a certain period of time and pretty soon I'm like, I made it finally. I made it.
Yeah.
You know how long? I mean, it does not take the spirit very long to let me know that I haven't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm being serious.
Yeah.
It's a powerful discussion to think about community.
It really is. You know, and to your point, what would the church look like? Exactly what we have, in my opinion. Mm. And I say in my opinion, reason being is I do think the church is young. I think we have some growth that we have to go through to learn more. You know, I know most people want to put the church like we're 2,000 years old. It's the end. Jesus is coming. Obviously, I'm not of that opinion. So I tend to think the church is young, that we have a lot of growth to go through. So what I think is right now what we're dealing with, and maybe for eternity we'll be dealing with, is selfish people that have to get over themselves.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, how do you change a group of people without changing people?
You tell them that they never know it all and that they have constant opportunity to keep changing, keep challenging themselves,
keep
growing. People
keep telling me I don't know everything. I still don't believe them.
Fair enough, me too.
You want to know, here's the weird thing. Here's the weird thing, right? So tell me if I'm wrong. Tiziana, I'm gonna ask you. Just tell me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
So fundamentalist Christians have a difficulty accepting progressive Christians. Fair?
Yeah, but I mean, I would say the vice versa is also true.
Thank you. Yes. That's what I wanted to say. A lot of times, like in progressive Christianity, which is like trying to reach out to everyone and have this love, they're so upset because the fundamentalists don't love like they do. But does that give them a right to not to love them back?
That's the thing. So you're going to say right now, like the number one thing that I deal with on a daily basis in my whole life. Mm-hmm. And this is because I am the only one in my whole sibling. When I say family, I mean my siblings and my mom's, you know, sister and my grandmother, right? I have some cousins now that are like, that were chill. But for the most part, like I'm the only one that does not subscribe to the theologies of my youth, the evangelical fundamentalist theologies of my youth. And I follow all these wonderful progressive content creators. But I'm gonna tell you right now, Dan McClellan's not gonna be at my funeral. My sister is.
Right.
And so, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And so in my life, my whole life as a person, I have this like extremely, you know, progressive podcast where I like, you know, interview people and do giant 6-part series on why the Bible doesn't say what we think it says about homosexuality. And then in my home life, I'm like, have to look at my Nana and say, yeah, the Lord is coming soon. I can tell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do know what you mean. And there's the idea of community and then there's real community.
That's the practice of it.
And
there's this, and there's the arguments that I choose not to have. And then there's also the gentle, I'm sorry that I'm willing to issue when I've been rude and abrasive with my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that happened a couple years ago when I got on my little TikToky high horse about whatnot and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And my sister was like, rude. It's what's your goal here?
Yeah.
Are you trying to be a bitch?
Right.
Are you just trying to make sure that you know that you're better than everybody else? Yeah, I was like,
no, I do this.
I was born this way, ma'am. Excuse me.
I wasn't trying.
Listen, no. You came out right in front of me. You're, you know, we're not apples don't fall far from trees. No, but she made a really good point.
I was born on this high horse.
She made a really good point. She was like, if you want to try to convince me that I need to change my theologies, maybe don't be such a know-it-all asshole jerk about it. Mm?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was totally humbled by that. And I cried. And that's when I first started doing the whoop series on the show.
Yeah.
Because I also realized that I had like been like, you know, blabbermouthing on some like historical facts that like weren't actually correct. So I had to come on the show and be like, actually, I was wrong there.
Yeah.
And that's become, and also this is you because of my relationship with you and watching the way you navigate and watching how humble you really are and how willing you are to hear and listen and be kind, right? I've realized that my approach to an individual in, you know, how would I speak to that person at my funeral has to also be how I speak about that group of people on my social media platforms. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I said whenever Sarita was in here the other day, because Sarita and I agree on almost nothing politically or theologically.
Right.
But I know she has a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never join in any progressive, what's the word? Torch carrying to try and tear her apart.
Yeah.
I would never do that. Mm-hmm. And if anybody in my team were to behave that way towards her, I would correct them immediately.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing, that's the place I think. We all need to figure out how to be okay with your theology is different than mine. Your belief about who's going to go to hell is different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
Your belief about your responsibilities towards your fellow man in order to honor God are different than mine. And those are actually really big statements that I'm making.
Yeah.
We're going to have to figure out how to be okay with those being different and still being kind.
You know what? While you were sitting there talking, I was thinking of something that, you know, Mike, your wife is going to be having a baby here in a few months. Congratulations. That's so awesome. And, but I remember whenever my first child, Catherine, was born, and it was like I was in the room. And Kelly was struggling, you know, and I remember she looked at me, it's right before she went into like that transitional phase, you know, and everything's good. And then as soon as she goes into the transition phase, which by the way, this was my first experience with, so I'd never had anything. And she looked at me and she was like, am I going to die? Because she didn't take any medications. She didn't even take an aspirin. She wanted to do it fully natural. That's what she wanted. And as long as there was no issue, you know, and the doctor, and we had a midwife, we didn't have a doctor. So we were looking at it kind of an alternative way of doing things for us back in the 90s. Okay. That was alternative for us. And when she looked at me and she said, am I going to die? Immediately looked at her and I was like, you're not going to die. This is the way it is. You know, you're doing great. You're not going to die. And then when she like shut her eyes and she was like doing her thing, I turned around and I looked at the midwife and I like mouth whispered, is she going to die? Like I see her like shifting and changing, like something's up, right? So while I watched her go through all of that and what she had to do in order to birth my daughter, I remember looking at her and I said this to her, and it's unfortunate that I didn't follow through. This is one of my worst regrets. I looked at her and I said, if I could remember this moment, I would never, ever say anything harsh to you ever. Mm. Like what she did for me that day.
Yeah.
She wanted the baby as much as I did, of course, but she did. This was for me.
Yeah.
And I saw that and I went through that experience with her. And I remember thinking that there, but boy, aren't we leaky vessels? We get filled with something and we feel this way, but then we're leaky vessels. So in the same way, one of the things that I stick in my mind is I think when I meet people, I think, you know, it's quite possible that this could be the only time that they could see what Jesus was like. And I'll ask the Spirit, what could I do right now that would give them a glimpse of who you are? Because I don't know. I wasn't with you. I mean, you could have been a 5'5" Jewish man that was dirty all the time. I don't know. I have no idea. But whatever you do is amazing, right? So when no matter who I meet, whatever it may be, what would it be? And when I ask that question, that's when something wells up inside of me that is just not me. I can tell you, Alan Bondar, I'll tell you for the rest of my life, I'm not going to deny it. I will never deny it. Because it is the Spirit.
It would be impossible.
I couldn't deny it.
It, yeah.
The Spirit of God works through me, and those fruits that the Bible talks about are real, and I watch them in effect, and I see it. That, to me, is what community is about. If we all can remember what He did for us, and then in the moment, as leaky vessels, ask for a filling of the Spirit. Mm. See what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Like,
and I can't, I'm not going to. Guys, I get judged a lot just for saying stuff like this. Like, you need to love them. Oh, Ricky's a pacifist and he's just a lover, not a fighter. You know, it's like, no, that's actually not what's going on. Like,
also, why is that a negative or a bad thing?
I don't understand it. But
that makes a zero sense.
How dare you?
It's like Rick. Like, Rick being a universalist, it's immediate. Like, as soon as he talks about it, look, I love Rick. We don't agree on that, on this one area, this one little tiny area we don't agree on. But if you think about what Rick believes, he believes that what Jesus did was so amazing that nothing could deny him. Nothing could deny him. That's how powerful it was.
It's also the inverse. It's, golly, I had this word in my head a second ago and it just fell out. Speaking of leaky vessels, it is also that turned inside out, which is that Jesus decided everyone was worth saving.
Yes.
All at once.
Look, right? Now, and so if in your mind you don't think somebody's worth it, now they're not worth it because you need them to conform to the image that you've made for them.
So the qualifiers, that's it, right?
It's always the qualifiers, right?
We become the gatekeepers to a city that has no gates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. We're gatekeeping.
And that's it. I mean, I've never seen people get so mad in my life at reading the story of the parable of the sheep and the goats.
Yeah.
And declaring that this is actually what a nation ought to do to be righteous before the Lord God of Israel. Like, that's what Jesus said. I'll gather the nations before me, put the goats on the left and my sheep on the right. And I'll say to the sheep, come, you blessed my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Because I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was in prison. I was sick and you came to me. Enter into your rest. And they will say, Lord, when? As much as you've done it to the very least of my brethren, you've done it unto me.
Yeah.
I don't under, to yeah, me, but now we that need is to as clear as day.
It is, but now we need to define the brethren.
Right.
But well, wait a minute, right. Let's care who the brethren, who's the
right.
brethren? That
right.
was Israel only, or uh-huh, though, wait a minute, that uh-huh, was just, you always, uh-huh, you're always going uh-huh. to find an excuse
yeah.
to be able to have your yeah. way. Yeah. Yeah. And the fact is, if I say, you know what, it was everybody, you can't say that. No, you can't. Yes, I can. It was everybody.
It was everybody.
That's how big he was.
Everybody.
That's
well, it what says Colossians that, it, that Christ came to redeem us all to himself.
Yeah, but that all, we can mess with the word all. But we do. We do all the time in Reformed theology. We play with that word all the time. And I get it. I get it.
You know, the first time I actually understood universalism from a healthy perspective, rather than, you know, what Bible college or the pastor or et cetera might teach you, was actually going across the land, looking someone in the eye. You know, you talk about casting out demons, right? Here I was, a guy, universalism, no way. And then I talked to somebody who put it in a palatable way, and I said, wow, Andy, I really didn't know it all. And, you know, and I remember leaving there and just saying, and now I've defended universalism from an vantage point. I'm not
of
a
course,
universalist,
I know.
But I have defended it because I listened. And I said, wow, that makes sense. And that man understands the love of God. And, you know, so again, I totally agree with the idea that we need to listen to each other. We need to learn better. We need to get away from this idea. And if I may say this, I preached about this last Sunday, actually. The healthiest church, in my opinion, was the church before Constantine. Now, I'm not bad talking Constantine because I actually preached about positive. I said, this was you're going to hear a Protestant actually say something positive about Constantine. And the idea was, I think in his generation, he did what he thought was the right thing. He mm-hmm. looked at the mess, looked at the church. Now, I would tell him, if he was talking to me today, I would say, no, no, this is what Jesus wants his church to look like. We don't need to all come under one umbrella in one. He needs us to be divided so that we can speak different languages, talk to people in different places, visit people in prisons, different places, people that want to feel called to visit the people in prison. And there's some that don't, some that want to put up a vanguard and say, no, we should make sure people don't go to prison. You're right. You're right. You do that. This person will visit. This person will clothe the people when they get home. This person, and we can have different convictions. That's the church in the Bible, a place of different convictions, willing to work together to do exactly what we read there.
It's easy on his arms were raised in worship.
Just there you
I
go.
Am
come
flipping
on.
Flipping right. out because you are, I'm like, this is exactly what I've been saying. Why do you think there are four gospels? They were different on purpose
right.
because it demonstrates the way that God is willing to tell the story in whatever way you need to hear it to reach you.
God speaks to people in
exactly,
ways they understand.
Exactly, but Constantine's desire to create a homogenous church, he was trying to legitimize it.
There's
for
obviously,
his own way,
yeah,
reasons and for his own kind of like political ends. And like I said, I don't think that I don't believe that he had some sort of like nefarious plot to like, you know, usurp whatever and control. But I think that what he saw and what everybody saw was this tiny little sect of religious upstarts that for some reason, no matter how hard they tried to squash it, just kept growing.
We can do so much more with this. We can do just shape it up. Make it the way I want it to be,
yeah,
and what I think it should be.
We really,
be great.
Someone really ought to write a letter, you know. Someone really ought to, you know, like, yeah,
that's
like
what he did. Exactly that.
You know, and I don't think there was any malintent behind it necessarily, but like we talked about this before too, what the church became with its gaudy cathedrals and its garb and its robes and the incense—that was imperialism. Seeped in. That was the way the king, the emperor, the governors, that's the way that the state legitimized their rule. And so the church adopted those same behaviors, outward expressions in order to legitimize their power. They didn't need to be legitimized.
But the beauty of this is, yeah. Here's the beauty of it. With every major schism in the church, the gospel went farther into
Amen.
The world.
And that's the wild this, piece this, about
and that
it.
That means that even the highest imperials, they were getting the gospel.
That's right.
And yeah. guess what? Even the lowest of the lows, when they started splitting and growing, that was, I feel like the Holy Spirit was at the center of every schism of the church. Like, I feel like he was there to spread that gospel. That's yeah. what I think is going on.
Well, every, Lynn and our friend Lynn Hiles.
Just see me talking with my hands right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
He talks about
a couple of schisms in the early days that I don't think got anything to do with.
Like, I don't think the
treatment of the discovered peoples in
Amen.
South America,
yes,
that particular papal bull.
I'm with you. Okay, not everyone,
that's
but
right. a lot of them, most
of them. All right,
but
sorry,
I hear
Rick.
Your point.
No,
yeah.
It's all good. Michael knows Lynn Hiles like I do. You've interviewed him and talked to him. He talks about where the pandemics of the world throughout history that it's reported that even after then. The gospels in blue in the population of Reformation, the population of church exploded after pandemic stuff.
Amen.
And Keep going.
No, please. You know, you're right. I just have another way of putting that. It's similar to what Lynn Hiles is saying there. It would be, we're teaching a series right now at the church. I'm teaching it called Church Rummage Sale. And the idea would be every 500 years, right? Every pandemic, every crisis, they happen a lot more than every 500 years. But I'm forgetting the name off the top of my head right now. There was a religious editor years ago, Phyllis Tickle of a religious magazine. She had explained that every 500 years of the church, and she was borrowing a quote from someone else. But either way, when you look at every 500 years, you find things in the church that are healthy that the church has picked up, things that weren't healthy. One example I usually use would be in the days of Tatian, you know, in the church history, they put together talking about the four gospels, the Diatessaron, right? They tried to unify the four gospels into one writing, and they even included some other writings in, and it was in the Syrian, you know, language, and they put it out there, and it was just to tell a unified story. Now, you and I would know why that's not right to do, because these men had different points they were trying to make with their gospel. Now, for 500 years, that writing was accepted in the Syrian church, and it was passed on, and then obviously Constantine comes in, you know, or whoever made that change, they took that out. Now, when I think about it, I say that was to me, when you're doing rummaging, obviously, rummaging is you get rid of stuff, you bring in new stuff, and then you take, one of the things I've been loving to say at the church was, you look at old stuff and you say, maybe there's a new purpose for it, right? Or maybe there's a new way we can use that. You know, I've seen people do that. They take things out of the thrift. We have a thrift ministry at our church. And I'm like, well, that's not quite what that was used for. But they're using it in the way that it serves them. And I think that the church has a lot to learn from this type of idea, where, again, it kind of fills in with what we're talking about here, where, you know, and I agree, I love that you brought up the point that with Constantine, there were people that spoke their language, Constantine did, right? As much as, for me, I've been along the lines, I've always thought along the lines that Constantine did it for political advantage, even selfish advantage. But I've been willing to, there's a book, Peter Lighthart has a book called Defending Constantine. I haven't read it yet, but I'm in the mood to read it. And the reason being is—
I want to read it.
I'm telling you, because I want to see what he would have to say.
Peter Lighthart's a great writer. I enjoy his books.
Yes, I read his commentary on Kings, and it was powerful. It's actually inspired me to write my own commentary.
Is that a pseudonym? It's just
It's his real name. Huh? L-E-I-T-H-A-R-T. Lighthart is his real last name.
That's his real last name? Mm-hmm. It sounds like a pseudonym. It's phenomenal, author. It's like too good for—
He and James Jordan, there's something about those guys. The way that they see the Bible and write, it's just quite amazing. They really are.
Amen. I'm thinking about the word light heart. You know, there's a religious tradition where if they weigh your heart. I forget what religion was out there that they weigh your heart and they determine if it's lighter than a feather, then you could go to heaven.
I think that might be from Indiana Jones.
And Temple of Doom. They jerk it directly out of your chest and then set it on fire.
Well, it's based on, believe it or not, I believe that's based on Egyptian, some sort of Egyptian philosophy.
Well, ecstasy. I can never say that word right. Right. The reading of the entrails to discover the will of God was one of the things they did in ancient times. Ecstasy. It's a hard word, but
this is how we go off topic. So,
Lord, give me a light heart.
Yeah.
Okay, back on track.
Wrap it around.
That's what I'm saying. Like a guy that writes like about biblical stuff. And I assume from the way you guys talk about him in a positive manner. And his name is Lightheart. It's just too good.
That's right.
It's so good.
And I will say this. May your entrails always be in your favor.
Yes. Okay. May the entrails
always in your favor. Eternal life.
May they be read that you have eternal life.
Classic.
Yes.
You know,
do you remember, what were we talking about?
Well, talking about Kings and talking about why did we bring up?
You were talking about the rummage sale, and you were talking about the piece where she was saying that like you need to go through the church and be willing to repurpose some things or like maybe think about some things differently.
Yes, and that was to Rick's point where you brought up Lynn Hiles, and we were talking about how every pandemic, every trial, every and time causes us to have the need to undo, redo. That is
renegotiate.
Again, Romans 12 tells us that. You know, I'm even thinking as we were talking before, I might paraphrase Romans 12 a bit different, and where it says, do not be conformed to the world, right? Or the patterns that are destroying this world. Some translations try to say maybe the Message Bible, but do not be conformed to the patterns that are destroying the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, by realizing you don't know it all. You need to see it from other people's perspectives. And, you know, that's the work. This is how you prove. This is your spiritual worship. That's what the text says. Mm-hmm. And this is how you prove what the perfect, acceptable, and true will of God. I keep changing the words, but either way, they all work.
Well, and they're probably all correct from a different translation.
Yeah, thank you. That's
that was
right.
The amplified version you just gave.
You brought us back to Romans 12. I think that would be a good time to finish this part one. and then open it up in part two. And we'll get you, you guys can hear this next week. And I'm going to hear it in like 5 minutes from now.
Yes.
So anyway, let's do that. Let's end this.
Because we're on Patreon.
That's right. So Tiziana.
Yo.
Thanks for coming all the way down.
Thanks for having me.
Terrible 26 traffic.
It wasn't you so did bad it. Today.
Yeah. Andy, thanks for being here and never leaving and always being here.
Thanks for living here.
You could take my car away and I would probably thank you because then the few times I left, I would just have to do it on a bike and I'd probably be healthier and happier because of it.
Yeah. He's the guy. He's the only guy that has like, he's got a brand new car with 17 miles on it.
I actually like that
car. I would be happy to take it. I'm so excited about that car.
He's got a newer car, and it's very nice.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It looks like something that you would go, like, what do they call it? A rally car.
Yeah.
It looks like a rally car.
Yeah. It's cool. It'll drive itself on the interstate. It's not like full self-driving. It's not intelligent, like, don't leave it alone.
Right.
But, yeah, it's great.
I would drive it home to my common bedroom.
Yeah. Big Daddy, appreciate you being here. And Mike, it's been great. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get into this next part. So, guys, we will talk to you again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Later.
Let me ask you something. Is your soap doing its job, or is it just pretending to be clean while secretly plotting to dry out your elbows? Be honest. If your soap came from a gas station or smells like floor cleaner, we need to talk. Halfback Mountain Soaps is what happens when real people say, hey, what if soap didn't suck? No harsh chemicals, no weird aftersmell, just shea butter, coconut oil, olive oil, and real essential oils that smell like actual things, like lemongrass and mountain streams, not cool power surge or Arctic wolf explosion. And when you order 5 bars, they throw in a free wooden soap dish, because nothing says fancy like a bar of soap on a little wooden throne. Free shipping if you spend $75, which is just a couple days worth of coffee you spilled on yourself anyway. So go to halfbackmountainsoap.com and smell like a person and not like regret.
Hi, I'm inside the podcast.